Lesson 23. Section 1. News in brief.
Soviet officials have confirmed that a crippled nuclear submarine sank in the Atlantic early today. U.S. officials believe the sub carried at least 16 nuclear missiles. An explosion and fire on the vessel last Friday killed 3 crewmen. The rest of the crew was successfully evacuated before the vessel sank. Soviet officials say no radiation leaked in the air or the ocean. It's unclear what may have caused the explosion that led to the sinking. A news agency in Beirut released a videotape today with pleas from 3 Frenchmen held for more than a year by the Islamic Jihad. Each hostage called on the French government to change its policy in the Middle East. Melody Walker reports from Paris.
During the 28-minute recording, the 3 hostages criticized the French government for failing to gain their release and said they had the impression they were being forgotten. Taking turns reading prepared texts, the 2 diplomats and 1 journalist looked physically exhausted and emaciated. Declaring that he was at the end of his rope, one of the hostages said that the government forgot about the remaining hostages after the release of 2 Frenchmen in June. A total of 7 French citizens are currently held hostage in Lebanon. A communique from the Islamic Jihad, which accompanied the video cassette, calls on France to negotiate the release of 17 Shiite prisoners jailed in Kuwait. The French Minister for Foreign Affairs did not comment on the content of the video cassette or the demand, but said tonight that the government was doing everything possible to free the hostages. For National Public Radio, this is Melody Walker in Paris.
Skies are clearing over Oklahoma, where heavy rains have produced what's being called the worst flooding in the history of that state. Thousands of people began returning to their homes, and officials began the task of assessing the damage. Floods have caused millions of dollars in damage, but specific estimates may not come until tomorrow, when cleanup operations are expected to start.
Section 2. News in detail.
Tonight, a Soviet nuclear submarine is on the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean, damaged 3 days ago by a fire on board. Officials in Washington and Moscow confirmed this morning's sinking. Officials in both countries also said the loss of the vessel presents no atomic threat, despite the presence of both nuclear missiles and a nuclear power reactor on the submarine. NPR's David Moffis has a report.
Pentagon officials say the crippled Soviet submarine, which normally carries 16 missiles, each with 2 warheads, went down just before dawn, 680 miles northeast of Bermuda. The Soviets put the precise time of sinking at 4:03 a.m. Eastern Time. And Moscow says there was no further loss of life aside from the 3 crewmen killed when a fire broke out Friday. American surveillance planes observed that towing efforts were halted shortly after midnight. About 3 hours later, the remaining crew members were observed abandoning ship in an orderly and planned fashion, according to American officials. The crew was rescued from life rafts by 5 Soviet surface ships in the area. Pentagon officials say a U.S. ocean-going tugboat was nearby and ready to assist, but the Soviets refused any help. Pentagon sources do not rule out the possibility that the Soviets scuttled their sub once it became clear that leaks could not be controlled. The Soviets had not explained the cause of the damage to the ship, but Pentagon officials say there was an explosion in one of the missile tubes that blew a big hole in the deck. Vice Admiral Powell Carter describes the damage this way.
You're talking about a structure that's enormously strong up there. That's like each of those missile tube doors it shuts is just like a safe vault. And then it shuts and locks with a big rotating ring. And that's been torn completely loose and bent like pretzel back. So the force of the explosion was enormous.
While Pentagon officials say they don't know what caused the missile tube explosion, they point out that Soviet missiles use highly volatile liquid fuel, and a fuel leak could have caused the eruption. Again, Admiral Carter.
These liquid-fueled systems are very, very dangerous. They're very unstable. That's why very early in our missile program, as pushing the leading edge of technology, we moved to solid-fueled missiles early on just for that fact, because liquid fuel is extremely dangerous.
Admiral Carter said it was possible the nuclear warheads on top of the missile burned in the fire or were thrown out into the water and sunk to the bottom 18,000 feet below. He said the other missiles and warheads might have been damaged by pressure as the sub sank, but there was no chance of a nuclear detonation or serious radiation leakage. The submarine's nuclear reactors, officials say, are self-contained in what amounts to rust-proof metal vaults and the Soviets say the reactors were shut down prior to sinking. U.S. officials say preliminary tests of the air and sea in the area have produced no signs of radioactive release. Pentagon officials say the U.S. will not make any attempt to recover the Soviet sub. It's Soviet property, says the Navy. Retired submarine Captain James Bush of the Center for Defense Information says a salvage effort just isn't warranted in this case with a submarine that was designed in the 1960s.
It's an old submarine with old missiles. I don't know that we would consider it worthwhile to have them to look at for the amount of money involved. Now, it would probably be worthwhile if we could get their communications equipment and their coding equipment, their keyless and things like that to decode messages. But I'm sure the Soviets, with the time that they had prior to this submarine sinking, should have gotten all of that material off.
Pentagon officials say the sub loss should not be a serious setback for the Soviets, but some analysts disagree. Pentagon consultant Norman Friedman says the Soviets have to be worried about liquid-fueled missiles on other subs. These things are time bombs, Friedman says. They should all be called in and checked out. I'm David Malpas in Washington.
Section 3, Special Report.
We think that we have solved this most venerable and grand of geographic mysteries.
With those words, Joseph Judge of National Geographic magazine announced a major discovery in American history, the true spot where Christopher Columbus first landed in the New World. And the Geographic's declaration upsets the orthodox assertions of nearly every American history textbook. NPR's Frank Browning has the story.
The orthodox explanation of where Columbus first landed was carved in textbook stone more than 40 years ago by the dean of Columbus historians, Samuel Eliot Morison. Morison declared incontrovertible the evidence that Columbus first set foot on Watling Island in the eastern Bahamas. But if the question were closed for Professor Morison, now dead, it was not for numerous other students of nautical history. For the last 5 years, the National Geographic's Joseph Judge has dispatched teams of historians, oceanographers, archaeologists, and translators to find the true location, and thereby to set straight the first footsteps of the American saga.
The famous fleet of Columbus, the Niña, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria, made its first landfall and its landing in the New World in 1492 at a small island in the eastern Bahamas named today Samana Key.
The basic problem in identifying Columbus's landing point, which he named San Salvador in 1492, is that he left no clear markings. Moreover, the log of Columbus's voyage now exists only in a transcription made by the Spaniard Bartolomé de las Casas, and many of the descriptions are either vague or use archaic terminology. Professor Morison had based his conclusions on a straightforward reading of the log, but he took no account of how Columbus's route would have been affected by constant ocean currents and winds. When the geographic team took the same data and then adjusted them for the effect of wind and current, they arrived at Samana Key, to the southeast of Watling Island. Then, to corroborate their findings, they went to points further down on Columbus's voyage, then backtracked according to the log notations, and again found that they landed not on Professor Morison's Watling Island, but on Samana Key. Once on Samana, the team then returned to Columbus's log to compare what they saw to Columbus's own visual description, recounted here by writer Judge in a film clip.
You mean settlements on a ridge behind the beach. Here is the beach, right here. You need a lagoon with a very narrow entrance, and that you have there. You need a piece of land shaped like an island that is not, and that you have there. In other words, every piece of geography that you're seeing before your eyes on this island is described in the Columbus log.
Moreover, a judge's team found archaeological traces of a settlement Columbus had mentioned finding on the actual island. So far, it is too early to know how the geographic's discoveries will affect the literature of professional history. But for those who worry about what may become of the site in an age of overnight historical theme parks, the Bahamian Minister of Education, Paul Adderley, who attended the press conference, assured questioners that the island will be safe. In Washington, I'm Frank Browning reporting.